Hello, thank you for joining me. This is Ernestine Lyons, host of Quick to Politic, the podcast, the social commentary show that explores topics ranging from social justice to history, economics, small business, and of course, local and national politics. Thank you for joining me. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Quick to Politic, the social commentary show. I am your host, Ernestine Lyons, and I am very excited to have a particularly special guest. We have the illustrious Kyra Harris Bolden, Esquire. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, m'lady. And she is a state representative, and she is currently running for one of the highest courts in the state of Michigan, Michigan Supreme Court. And she is on your ballot. Remember to flip it over to the nonpartisan positions and vote Kyra Harris Bolden on Tuesday. And so, yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on. And I just want to acknowledge that I am in my nursery because my office was co-opted by my 11-week-old. So we turned my office into a nursery. So if you're wondering why there are giraffes and things, that's why. So I am State Representative Kyra Harris Bolden. I currently represent Michigan's 35th House District, which includes the communities of Southfield, Lathrop Village, Beverly Hills, Bingham Farms, and Franklin. I can't say that 10 times fast if provoked. But I'm a lifelong resident of Southfield, which means I'm a lifelong resident of the great state of Michigan. Went to Grand Valley State University for undergrad, went to the University of Detroit Mercy School of Law for law school, practiced as a criminal defense attorney, then transitioned to becoming a judicial law clerk for the Honorable Judge John A. Murphy in Wayne County Third Circuit Court, and then was a civil litigator with Lewis and Monday, which is one of the oldest and largest Black-owned law firms in the country, and practiced in several areas of civil law before I thought about who's making these laws. Really, I just had the questions, because when you're going through your law practice, and every lawyer has had these questions, because you see how the law affects your clients, you see how it affects Michiganders. And I thought that if I could be at the table at the forefront of this language, that I could lend a voice to what I was seeing in the courtroom. And so I decided to run for office in 2018. And to my surprise, for the open seat, I had 5 opponents. So there were 6 of us in this race, and I had never run for office. And, you know, there comes a time where you just have to think about, you know, is this something I want to do? I had taken leave from my job, so I didn't have an income. You know, I'm knocking doors 24 hours, you know, not 24 hours, but 7 days a week at this point. And we ended up winning my 2018 election with 45% of the vote against 5 opponents, which is pretty unheard of. But, you know, I like to say, you know, when I put my mind to something, it's, you know, you're going to get all of me, all of
right,
it.
All of the energy. And I know, like, even with this campaign, you said, I may be expecting, but I'm going to run a campaign. And you have, like, I've seen you everywhere, and you're just like nonstop.
You know, I had to tell somebody, I will be the hardest worker, pregnant or not. I mean, it doesn't matter. And I would like to say that that's true. And that is, that's no shade to Justice Bernstein, who is a very, very hard worker. You know, we hit the ground running, and we've been able to get 5 bills passed into law. And I sit in the minority in the legislature. And so that is a really great accomplishment to get 5 bills signed into law and serving for 4 years. There are some people that never get any bills passed into law. And so I have really done really good work to work with the other side of the aisle to gain respect in my caucus as well as the other caucus. And, you know, one thing about me and where my thirst for justice comes from is when I was in college. So I didn't even want to be an attorney. I never really sought this until my great-grandmother told me the story of my great-grandfather. And in 1939, he was lynched in Tennessee after asking a store owner for a receipt. And a lynch mob ensued, and he was beaten and castrated and thrown into the local river.
Oh, wow.
And the coroner deemed it an accidental drowning. And there is a documentary about this called Accidental Drowning. And as a result, his murders walked free. And so we've all heard these stories about Jim Crow and lynching and slavery. But I didn't know that that had impacted my family until I was an adult. And then I felt really compelled to get involved with our justice system because government sanctioned injustice was the norm at some point in our history. And we can easily slide back if you don't have the right people in positions of power. And so I've practiced in many different areas of our law, and as well as making law, because I'm just trying to find my place and how I can work best within our justice system so that Michiganders see equal justice under the law. And so that's kind of been my mission since I graduated college and went to law school. So, you know, that's been my journey and why I'm so passionate about doing this. And who sits on the Michigan Supreme Court matters, because it's the last word. It's the last word on many important issues, but you know, there's nowhere else to go. You know, when you have a case, you appeal to the Court of Appeals. The Michigan Supreme Court only picks a finite amount of cases to take up, which are really important cases. And after that, that's it. When the Michigan Supreme Court makes a determination,
that's the law of the state. That's the law of the land, you know, for us. The buck stops with you guys.
Buck stops with the Michigan Supreme Court. So I think it's important to have justices that believe in equal justice under the law and that believe that liberty and justice for all means something to every Michigander. And so that's why we're running for Michigan Supreme Court.
Hey, all right. All right. You guys heard it. You heard it right here. And, you know, with that, that is a very illustrious background. And I feel like you didn't waste any time after college, you know, being a law clerk and, you know, just, you know, doing everything, all the things, five bills against five opponents. And that's the thing, you know, I've worked as a policy staffer in the legislature, and I know how difficult it can be to, you know, bills die, you know, on the floor and committee. And, you know, so it's just so important for folks to realize, like, you know, and I think that I've started having this podcast to have these political conversations about the local level, you know, races that matter, because there's so many people who don't know the difference between a congressperson and a state rep and a state senator and, you know, what your, you know, senators who represent you in Washington, you know, do and how you can get their support to change the laws. And, you know, I'm so glad that you became a lawyer. So, because you've been doing amazing work in the House, and then I want to, you know, hopefully we all want to see you, you know, continue this great work, you know, in the Michigan Supreme Court. And so you kind of answered most of the basic questions I had about, like, you know, your background. And so I kind of want to delve right into a question you kind of touched on a little bit. You know, we live in very polarized times. And, you know, I just think that I have always known the Supreme Court to be this impartial group of folks who, you know, especially the federal Supreme Court, when you think about, you know, how you have no idea what they stand for or what their personal lives are like and, you know, what their political opinions are. You just know that they're there to make legal decisions. And, you know, these Supreme Court decisions should be, you know, just people thinking about the law, and they should be just. But I think we're so polarized, it seems that even, you know, people's opinions come through. And I think that even the Dobbs decision was, you know, kind of people's personal opinions kind of coming through, as opposed to looking at the law and looking at who it impacts and is it serving everybody no matter what you believe. And so how does one remain impartial, particularly in times of such polarization, and just interpret the law? It's not about what you believe, your spiritual beliefs. It's not about your personal, opinions, and just uphold justice and, just interpret the law. How does one do that? And how would you navigate those spaces when there are things you care about as a woman and as a woman of color? So how does one do that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, especially with me being a partisan elected official. I get this question a lot. But what I will say is, number one, I was trained as a neutral. So, my first experience is working for a judge and seeing the law under neutral eyes and a neutral lens. So researching for myself and drafting opinions or drafting memos to have the judge read, and we would do a lot of discussion. And one thing I think was incredibly helpful is that my judge said early on in my training that he didn't want me to read plaintiff or defendant's brief. He wanted me to research the law for myself because he didn't want me to get tainted with other people's opinions about what the law said. He wanted me to figure out what the law said and then have a conversation with him and then read the briefs after. And so that has always been my approach, throughout my career. That's even my approach as a legislator. And so I look for issues that would help Michiganders. So if you look at the bills I've been able to get passed into law, and most of the bills that I have sponsored have been in conjunction with the Republican chair of judiciary. And so we're talking about an amendment to the Wrongful Imprisonment Compensation Act. So now more Michiganders have access to the compensation if they are wrongfully convicted. We're talking about the Address Confidentiality Act passed into law, which shields your address if you have been a survivor of sexual assault and violence with the Attorney General's office. Some other boring bills, but one bill I like to cite because it was a singular bill, so that means that there were no other sponsors on the bill, was an amendment to language for a liquor license bill. And it doesn't seem like a big deal, but I think it helps economic development. But, these are issues that I find to be nonpartisan. And if you look at our votes, 98% of the issues that we vote on are either bipartisan or, in my opinion, nonpartisan. We are all working towards what does Michigan look like, for the best. I think, most of us go and they just want Michigan to be better, right? And I think in interpreting the law, I think it's helpful to have the mindset or to know what goes into making a law when you're talking about statutory interpretation. I think that is a very important perspective to make sure is represented on the Michigan Supreme Court. But like I said, throughout my career, I have worked with people that have different opinions, backgrounds, perspectives than me. But I think the most important thing is listening to people, making sure they're seen and heard in our judicial system. Everything is not going to work out however everyone wants, but did you have a fair opportunity to be heard? Were you seen by the court? Were you heard by the court? And have an opportunity to put on your case before the court. Access to justice is so important. And so that's the type of justice I will be. I will evaluate each case on a case-by-case basis for its uniqueness and interpret the law as written and in conjunction with our state constitution. And so when you become a judge or a justice, you have to leave your personal opinions aside and interpret the law to the facts that are ahead of you. It can be a mental leap. I don't think it's that much of a mental leap for me, again, because I was trained as a neutral very early on in my career. But I hope to work with my colleagues on the Michigan Supreme Court and listen to their perspective, even if we don't necessarily come to the same conclusion at first, because you never know how someone else thinks about something that can influence your perspective as well. And so I think listening to other people, listening obviously to the litigants, but also listening to each other and our perspective is incredibly important.
Right, right. You know, I think that's beautifully said, because, you know, at the end of the day, you really just want to walk away from, you know, a solution. It's like, okay, did I apply the law? Did I look at this, you know, from a, you know, neutral perspective and try to understand every angle, and then even have an understanding moment of like listening to it from different perspectives. So I think that is really important, not only in our lawmakers, but, you know, our folks in the courts, you know. And so like you learned this early on from Third Circuit Court. And I think that it's just important for all of us. And even as granular as the levels of government get, from municipal government to, you know, the state level, I think it's really important, because those decisions are not partisan. You know, the smaller and the lower levels you get in government, you know, it's really, you know, not something that's going to, you know, really tear people apart in the ways in which we think. People think politics are, you know, they use it as a dirty word, but it's like, well, no, we're actually deciding things about like our environment and who takes out the trash and, you know, what we're going to do to, you know, improve our courts. And so this is, I think, something that more people need to, you know and understand about how our laws are made. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. You know, I kind of wanted to ask, you know, I'm quite sure with you being young and beautiful, you know, that you are a example to so many young Black girls. And, you know, I remember you were on a podcast, I think it was the Run for Something podcast, like maybe 2019 or 18 with Mary Manoogian. And Mari Manoogian. And you guys were kind of talking about your experiences being so young and being women. And, you know, so what advice would you give to, you know, young girls who want to be, I know one of my friends, Caprice Jackson, she's actually like, she says she's like Olivia Pope and always loved, you know, that character in that show where she wants to be this.
You know, she worked for me. She was my staffer. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
My first staffers when I.
You know what? She said that I'm actually a part of something called Black Women Win Michigan. And, you know, we were in that cohort together, like the inaugural cohort. And, you know, we were able to, you know, just kind of talk. And there's so many, the whole aim of the program is to, you know, bring these talented Black women and uplift their voices so that, you know, people know that we're out here, and encourage them to run for office. We want to see, you know, more Black women in government in Michigan. And so, you know, I just kind of want to know, like, what would you say to encourage, you know, that next generation, those Gen Zers and or, you know, folks who are maybe even millennials who want to, you know, continue, like maybe they lost a race or they want to get involved and don't even know where to start. So what advice would you give to political hopefuls, particularly Black women?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to get involved in your community. You know, I think it's important if you're going to be a public servant, you have a record of public service, you know, outside of, you know, wanting to change things, because there are multiple ways to change things and to get involved. But you want to make sure that you're known for that, that you're in those spaces, right? And that you're meeting with the right people and things like that. So if you're in the community, and you will know your mayor, you'll know your city council, you know, the people that influence, you know, your community. So that would be my first thing. My second thing is you know, don't wait to be asked. Yeah, I think as women, and particularly as Black women, we always want to wait for, you know, someone to say you're good enough. Sorry.
No, or we think we need one more accolade. We think we need one degree, or one more, you know, I need more experience. And you undercut your own experience and your lived experience by thinking it's not enough, that imposter.
Exactly. So I was reading this article about men versus women, and applying for jobs. And they were saying like men, if as long as they have like 80% of the qualifications, they'll apply. But women will have to have, you know, 90 to 100% of the qualification before they'll even apply, right? And so I think that that's really interesting and telling, and why most women have to be asked to even run for office. You know, and as I'm sitting here, myself included, you know, I was asked. But get involved in your community, find really, really great mentors. You know, ask people, you know, will you be my mentor if you think that they're doing something? You know, I make sure I have about 5 mentees at any given time, and I just pour into them, because what I don't want is I get to a place in my career and I look behind me and there's nobody else. And so I like to say, lift as you climb. And so as someone is pulling you up and mentoring you, make sure you're mentoring someone else, so that we can make sure that we're in positions of power going forward, and there's no vacancy or void if one of us decides to take a step back or retire or whatever. We have to really build a bench, I like to say, and lift as we climb. And so get involved in your community, find excellent mentors or people that you look up to, and just do it.
Right. Just do it. You heard it first, right here. And I just think that's a really important, like you said, it's pretty much don't climb up the ladder and then snatch it up from the next person and just, you know, hold on to it. You have to each one teach one and make sure you're reaching back and giving back. So I love that. I love that. Speaking of, you know, legacies and giving back, you know, your daughter's name is prominently right there behind you. And we talked about how, you know, you were expecting, and then of course, still like giving 110% out there, you know, campaign. And then even now, your baby Emerson was born in August. And so as a new mom, what is the legacy of that you would like to hand over to her, you know, as a Michigander? And would you like to see her continue to, you know, to stay in Michigan? I mean, I work in economic development, and I know that, you know, Michigan's economy and, like, you know, the Detroit area that I grew up in, we've gone through some ups and downs. We experienced the largest municipal bankruptcy. And so Detroit is still emerging and we're still growing. And, you know, as a result, a lot of folks, you know, the next generation is, we're hopeful that they'll stay in Michigan, that they'll, you know, find jobs here, you know, and that they, when they have bright parents, you know, that they'll continue to have the resources to thrive here. And so, you know, what is the Michigan you'd like to, you know, as a, you know, okay, we're going to be talking down the line. So you're a former state rep and current Michigan Supreme Court Justice, you know, hopefully after next week. And, you know, so your legacy that you have left and, you know, what you would like her to, you know, have as a Michigan resident, you know, as a future.
Yeah. Well, I think the state of Michigan is wonderful. And I've always wanted my friends and family to stay here. And I think it was in college too, where I realized that so many people had no intention of staying in Michigan. We educate the best and brightest. We have some of the best colleges and universities, and we have people fleeing the state, going to other places like Georgia and California and New York and DC and all these different places. And so we talk about quality of life, and especially as a state representative, and usually people talk about education and taxes and things like that. But I really think that justice is a part of that, right? When we had folks migrating from the South to escape, you know, Jim Crow and, you know, just discrimination, right? Escape their conditions and come to the North and build homes. And a lot of people started working in the factories and things like that. That's kind of where Detroit was built. It was people migrating from the South because of those conditions, right? And so we know that people are not going to want to stay in a place that they don't feel like justice will be served if they don't trust our justice system. And so my legacy, I hope that we can build systems and have conversations to have a better justice system so that people will want to stay in Michigan because they have an excellent quality of life. And they know that if anything happens, that they will be seen and heard and they can trust our justice system. That is the legacy that I hope to leave. And I do hope that my daughter decides to stay in Michigan for her future.
Beautifully said. And yeah, Michigan is definitely a great state with so many opportunities. And, you know, I'm a history buff. I love looking at the history of how we produce stoves. And then we were, you know, it's auto industry hub. And so, you know, we hope for great things for, you know, Michigan in the years to come, and that we are the place that, you know, welcomes everybody and brings in all the tech and, you know, just great things ahead. So, I hope your daughter has a beautiful, bright future. And I know she will because you're her mom. So I want to thank you so much for, you know, answering my questions, because I'm nosy. That's why I started this podcast, because I'm always like, can I pick your brain and ask a million questions? And so and I just, fun story, everybody. You know, I met Kyra Rep Bolden at an event, and you know, she was so encouraging because, you know, I've been thinking about law school, and she's just like, yes, go for it. And, you know, I know you can do this. And so you've definitely been my inspiration for, you know, achieving and continuing to grow and evolve. So I want to thank you for being on the show, and for, you know, just kind of all of the hard work that you've been putting into, you know, the race for Michigan Supreme Court. Everybody vote on November 8th. November 8th. So you still have time to vote. And, you know, so yes. So get out there, and it's GOTV time, everybody. So get out there and vote. And I also want to close by, you know, saying, you know, I'm thanking today's sponsor, 1000 Women Strong, and, you know, just kind of talking about their mission to uplift women. And so their vision is to provide resources that support their efforts by creating a hub where Black women can organize and mobilize around the issues that impact us and our extended communities. So I want to thank you to them. And thank you so much for being on our show. All right.
Thanks bye, everybody. So much. Appreciate it. 5 days.
Let's all go. Right. Any other closing thoughts?
Oh, make sure you vote in the nonpartisan section of your ballot. You have to bubble us in. A lot of people vote straight ticket and they say, I voted for you. And I said in the nonpartisan section, and then they have to think about it. You have to bubble in myself and Justice Bernstein for your vote to count. And if you're thinking to yourself, oh my goodness, I turned in my absentee ballot and I didn't vote in the nonpartisan section, or if you're not sure, you can go to your local clerk's office and spoil your ballot and you can re-vote.
Oh, I didn't know that. Thank
you. Yes, you can spoil your ballot and re-vote if you're not sure if you voted in the nonpartisan section. The nonpartisan section is where you have your judges and your school board members. Very, very important. You want to vote the entire ballot, and remember to vote for the B team, Bernstein and Bolden. And also follow us on social media at Bolden for Justice, or my personal is at Kyra H. Bolden. And I promise I have interesting content for you. So please follow us. Please, please, please vote. Take 10 people with you to vote. And let's go win on Tuesday.
All right. Well, thank you. And thank you all for viewing out there. All right.
Bye, everybody.
Okay. End of the live. And goodbye. Thank you so much for watching out there and listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and for watching via the YouTube playback. And thanks so much. Remember to subscribe, like, comment if you like social commentary and language learning content. All right. I also want to thank our sponsor, 1000 Women Strong, for joining our podcast today. And their purpose is to
They have a vision to provide resources that support their efforts by creating a hub where Black women can organize and mobilize around the issues that impact us and our extended communities. And let me tell you a little bit more about their power. Or it's the National Constituency, and it's the provisions and resources, and then they recruit and train, mobilize, and organize the intersections of issues that impact Black women in our extended communities. And they value uplifting Black women's leadership by recruiting and training those folks. So feel free to visit them at 1kwomenstrong.com. That's 1kwomenstrong.com. All right. So, and then I also want to thank another sponsor, Earnest Tea. So if you're in the mood for a wonderful winter or fall tea, then Earnest Tea is the tea for you. We have delightful chai blends, and we also have a wonderful hibiscus black tea blend that is called Birdie's Blend. It's one of our new ones. It's ginger, hibiscus, and cinnamon, and they just waft together for a very fruity, spicy, delightful hot tea that you can enjoy on a day like today. So please go over to earnesttea.com and enjoy your cup of tea today.